Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Radio Nerd. Today, I'm switching up the sort of format a little bit. It's the first couple episodes, and I'm just kind of trying to find my thing. And so for this episode, we're going to do a little bit of upkeep up here at the start of the episode. We're going to move into, instead of doing definitions after an example, we're going to sort of talk about a couple of terms that are going to come up repeatedly throughout the episode. I'm going to give you a little bit of a history lesson about something that happened earlier on in the past decade. And then we're going to talk about sort of that history lesson combined with everything that we've been talking about today. I was pretty happy with the first episode, went up. I actually haven't listened to it myself, which sounds terrible, but I had this weird, how would you describe it? Nervousness about, listening to it myself, I guess. I'm not really sure why. But anyways, I've heard good things. I've gotten great feedback from a few people, friends and such. And definitely, I encourage more of that. That's always awesome. And to that note, I have set up an email account for this. As I said last episode, I was going to set up an Instagram account, but at time of recording, there is a global Instagram and Facebook outage. So I can't do that right now, unfortunately. I was wondering why earlier, my Instagram was loading when I was having, my morning coffee, and I guess this is it. But I do have a email open and ready. It's going to be, as well, it's going to be available on within the description on Radio Laurier's website, where you can access this podcast. Email address is radionerdwlu@gmail.com. All one word, no capitals, nothing like that. Feel free to send me anything that you're interested in. If you have comments, questions, ideas for things that you want to hear me talk about, if you yourself want to come on and talk about it, I'm also open to, you know, talking and, seeing if we get along. I mean, I want people to come on the podcast as guests and talk about things that are important to them. But as well, this is a podcast that's sort of a platform for myself and a platform for the ideas that I have. So, you know, it's going to be a conversation. And if me and you are comfortable talking with each other for a period of time around an hour, then totally come on. Freudian almost there a little bit. Anyways, but it definitely, even if you don't feel comfortable doing that, message, have a conversation with me. That's what this is supposed to be about. This is supposed to be about a conversation. And that does kind of go into some of the reasons why I chose to talk about the topic for today. Some people may have guessed the topic based on the title. Take a look at the title, see if maybe you realize what it's about. If not, it's going to become very obvious very soon. Some other points of note before we get into stuff. Next week is reading week for the university, Wilfrid Laurier University. And I am also going to be on vacation next weekend, so there is not going to be an episode. I think I might sit down next week and record the next episode so that I have a little bit of a buffer going on, and I can fit the recordings a little bit more easily into my schedule. There won't be an episode next week. So feel free, if you have any questions or anything like that, send them in. If I'm able to make an Instagram in some time between now and then, it will also get posted in the new description that's going to go up on Radio Laurier's website around the same time that this episode will go up. I think, don't hold me to that 100%. I need to talk with the manager and talk about that to make sure that stuff is up. onto the topic. Today we're talking about science fiction Puritans. This is sort of like the title that I have for this topic. It'll become a little bit more obvious why that's the topic here as we go into things. This is going to be, I'm going a little more freeform with this, a little bit different with this episode, just trying it out. Seeing, like I said, where we're going to go with stuff. So I'm going to define a couple of things, and we're going to start out with gatekeeping. As plenty of people probably know, or maybe people don't know. That's why I'm talking about it. Gatekeeping has been a problem for the past, I don't know, while, I would say, with regards to nerd culture especially. Gatekeeping arises out of that sort of downtrodden, old-fashioned idea of what a nerd is, you know? The straight white kid who was bullied in high school and now sees nerddom as their escape and their kingdom where they get to dictate what happens there. You know, it's a regaining of power from someone who was bullied. But at the end of the day, nothing in our modern world should be kept to one specific group, you know? Gatekeeping does a lot to diminish and cause stagnation within different groups, especially within nerd groups. And I'm specifically talking about within nerd culture. So gatekeeping, as defined by Oxford Dictionary, is the activity of controlling and usually limiting general access to something. So what you get with gatekeeping is you get people who tell you how something should be, how something should be enjoyed, how something should be written, how something should be created. And all these things come within different areas of nerd fandom. We're specifically talking about science fiction and books and literature as a medium in this episode. But I think I'm going to come back and talk about a couple of other examples of this, which I will mention over the course of this episode, because there are other big examples of gatekeeping that have gone more successfully than the example I'm going to use for today. The second sort of definition here that I'm going to use is we're going to talk about reactionary movements and reactionaryism. And reactionaryism is it's a right-wing ideology, essentially, that sort of favors a return to status quo. It's an anti-reform or an anti-reform, I guess, would be the best way to put it, anti-reform movement. It wishes to return to a specific status quo. Reactionaryism, you find a lot alongside conservative politics. And as we know, conservative politics and right-wing politics have been on the rise globally in the past little bit. And reactionaryism has become a huge part of some movements within nerd culture, especially with regards to different forms of media. And hand-in-hand with gatekeeping, in the form of, you know, people are used to a certain thing, and when that thing starts to evolve and change, as things naturally do, there is pushback against that change. And a lot of that pushback comes in the form of reactionary movements. And what we're going to be talking about today is a couple of reactionary movements within science fiction fandom. And the final thing that I'm going to just quickly overview and get you to know about, because it's a term that I'm going to talk about, is the Hugo Awards. Some people might be thinking, oh, now I get what the title is about. I don't think I mentioned the title. The title is Crying Dogs of this episode. So the Hugo Awards is it's the number one award for science fiction. It also is given to fantasy to a certain degree sometimes. Science fiction and fantasy as genres, I should say, as a note here, are very interconnected, are very close to each other, overlapping in some regards. Speculative fictions, sort of like the English and literature studies term for the whole group of genres, but science fiction and fantasy are very varied, with innumerable numbers of subgenres within the genre, and you'll get to see, you'll understand why I'm sort of talking about it like this, that, you know, it's very wide and very different, like some genres can be very different from other subgenres of science fiction. And the Hugo Awards are sort of the number one award for people who write science fiction. The way it's held is it's held every year. There's a two-step voting process where people who are people nominate with their first ballot, and then the second ballot at the World Science Fiction Convention will vote on it. Is there anything else that I need to discuss about that? I don't believe so. It comes in many different categories. Most of them are specifically books and stuff like that, but there's also art and actual dramatic presentation awards as well within the Hugos. And it was first given out in 1953 and has been given out since then every single year, as far as I'm aware. Yeah, I think that is basically all the information that you need. Let's go into what happened starting in 2013 and continued to happen till around 2019. I think it's sort of petered out, this specific movement. It petered out around like 2017, but there is still followings that do profess this, and we'll talk specifically about those more, even more right-wing movements that are involved here. But to start out, we need to talk about where it began. So we're going to go back about 8 years to 2013. Is that math right? Yeah, that math is right. And we're going to talk about the origins of what is called the Sad Puppies movement. So the Sad Puppies are essentially a right-wing anti-diversity voting campaign. They were originally founded in 2013 by Larry Correa. If I get anybody's names wrong within this, I'm talking about people that I don't really care about at the end of the day. And these people are responsible for running campaigns that were essentially fueled by hate. Whether that was their intention or not, I'm not going to apologize for getting their names wrong. Larry, he's an author. He primarily writes urban fantasy, along with some science fiction and general fantasy stuff. He's Mormon. I've actually, I'm going to say unfortunately, read some of his books. He writes a series called Monster Hunter International. And I don't know if anybody's like dived into urban fantasy, but there's some really good urban fantasy, and then there's a lot of just really mediocre urban fantasy. And the problem comes that when you go into a deep dive like this and you start to read some good urban fantasy, you start looking around for other urban fantasy. And one of the ones that I found was Monster Hunter International. And I will say that I never paid to read his books. I don't believe I did, at least. I can't remember. This is a while ago now. But it's very obviously written by someone who has a conservative backing. All of the relationships within the books, air quotation marks, are very heteronormative. There's very... the stories are very action-oriented, pulpy, one might say. Not that that's a bad thing. There's nothing wrong with pulp. his pulp is very American action hero pulp, though. It's very gun-focused. Let's just say, reading the book, you can very easily glance the general political views of someone who wrote a book like this. And so it's not really surprising that Larry founded Sad Puppies. It's essentially... It was a group of science fiction fans who attempted to unite as a voting bloc within the Hugo Awards. So as I explained, they have two rounds of voting, right? The first one is a nomination vote, and the second one is a full-on, a larger vote. The nomination vote comes before the science fiction convention where people vote, and then everybody who attends that convention is able to vote on the final award. And there are options for no award as well. So you are able to, if you decide that none of the category or none of the nominated pieces of fiction within the category should win an award, you can vote for no award as well, abstaining essentially. Or I guess it's not really abstaining, but you understand what I mean. Like, you could be like, none of these deserve it, no award gets awarded this year. And that's happened before, and as you will see, that will come into play within this story. Shouldn't say story, history lesson. Anyways, so from what it seems and from what I can glean from this, and this here is my own personal opinion, it seems as though Larry was sort of, I mean, it's quite possible that Larry fully believed in what he thought was correct and what he thinks is like the best form of action, the best way to influence the awards, right? And he thought there was some sort of problem with the amount of diversity that was happening. He created Sad Puppies and put his own work as one of, essentially how the Sad Puppies operate, they should probably get into that, is they release a list of what their followers should, actually Sad Puppies specifically recommends and doesn't say do it 100%. It's a little bit more accepting of division within their own group. The second movement we're going to talk about, which we're going to get to in a few minutes here, is a little bit more hardline, and I'll talk about that as well. So Sad Puppies apparently comes from watching an SPCA ad that featured Sarah McLachlan and crying puppies. I'm not sure. I really don't understand why anybody would want to associate themselves with Sad Puppies. It seems like a really weird way of trying to garner some sort of like sympathy. I don't really understand. Anyways, so to me, it really did seem like Larry's first campaign, the one in 2013, was very much so focused on nominating his specific book. Monster Hunter Legion was the book, which, like I said, in, Monster Hunter International is the one series that I've written or that I've read from Larry. This is the only author that I've read from the three people that I'm going to be talking about today, because I believe the last one's not an author. Oh, no, he is an author. Okay, never mind. I haven't read any of the other guys' books. But like I said, Monster Hunter was pulp entertainment. It wasn't particularly bad. I grew out of it because I don't really enjoy that kind of work anymore. But I also don't think it's Hugo Award worthy. And Larry obviously did. And he... this is how I think about Larry to a certain degree, is that he started the movement. But I personally don't 100% believe that he is, like, big into it. I think he's an opportunist, in my opinion. And he's an opportunist who grabbed onto similar ideas of right wing. He is a conservative, and he is on that side of the political spectrum. So it's not surprising that he heard about these types of movements. And I think he just used the idea of one of these types of movements in order to get himself something. The second year, it seems like a little, he might have expanded, and he's doing a little bit more of an actual movement in this time, trying to get a block. There were 12 different nominees on their slate. Slate is the term that I'm going to use for their list of people that should be voted for. In 2014, one of them was Larry's book. And another store, one of the nominated stories was a story called, a short story called Opera Vita Aeterna. And it ended up being given the No Award for the category that it was submitted in. That's going to become important in a few minutes here. But essentially, the first 2 years, there wasn't much success with regards to Sad Puppies. It was a lot of hoopla from Larry, and also from someone who was working with him, that I'm going to go into in a minute, who ended up taking over the campaign in 2015. In 2015 is when stuff really started to kick off, and when we got into some very clearly problematic things. Because as I see it, 2013 and 2014 was problematic, and Sad Puppies was anti-diversity and anti, it was right-wing and anti-inclusion, and very much so trying to gatekeep a genre of fiction, a genre that is wide, with a capital W-I-D-E, because science fiction inhabits, you know, post-apocalyptic, cyberpunk, steampunk, dystopian, time travel, all these different, you know, space opera, so many different genres that are so vastly different to each other. And trying to tell people what a genre should be, especially in literature, is really, really dumb at the end of the day, and is really, like, limiting on what you can write and what you should be able to write. And this is my biggest problem with these types of movements, is it limits creativity. You know, diversity itself allows for people to draw on a wide variety of experiences that other people can't experience. My experience as a bisexual white man is going to be different from the experience of anybody else who is bisexual, whether it's a woman, whether it's a person of color, whether it's someone who is non-binary or transgendered. Everybody else is going to have a different experience, and diversity only helps us see through the lenses of other people's experience and then see how they create stories. And that kind of creativity is invaluable when we're talking about art and when we're talking about entertainment at the end of the day, which is what nerd culture is about. It's about things that bring us joy. And limiting our joy through limiting our creativity is dumb. It's stupid. I'm going to just repeat it. It makes no sense to me. It makes absolutely no sense. And at the end of the day, the Hugos are awards for excellence. They're awards for the best. just because you don't like the best thing doesn't mean it's not good. There are plenty of books that I've read that I haven't really enjoyed that lots of other people have. Here we go. I don't like Harry Potter. I used to when I was younger, and even before J.K. Rowling's, what do we call that? Removal of goodwill, like intentionally, of an entire generation that she did. Even before that, I sort of started to grow a little salty on that. You know, I'm not a big fan of the world building. A lot of it doesn't make sense to me. We don't need to get into the reasons why I don't like Harry Potter, but lots of people love Harry Potter. Lots of people are able to remove the author from the work, which I now am not. But again, like I said, I already didn't really like it when she started talking about when she came out as a TERF. And that's fine. That doesn't mean that it's not something that other people enjoy. That doesn't mean that I think that people who enjoy Harry Potter are wrong or don't get enjoyment out of it. Just because I don't get enjoyment out of something doesn't mean it's not valid for someone else to. And that's something that seems to be fundamentally opposite to what movements like Sad Puppies believe. So we're going to get into 2015 now. And we're going to talk about Brad Torgerson. Brad Torgerson is another science fiction author. He originally started making, or he helped Larry with the first two campaigns. Larry bowed out of the second campaign, and Brad took over as the primary one. I'm just going to say their first names because, to be perfectly honest, I don't want to say Torgerson so many times. I've never read anything that Brad has written. He's won some Dragon Awards. He won a Hugo, actually, in 2012, which is awesome. So clearly he's not a terrible author or anything like that. But he clearly has ideas of what science fiction should be that other people don't agree with. So he took over and he announced their slate in 2015. And his biggest argument, as I will talk about with an article on Gizmodo, where they sort of go into a lot of this kind of stuff that I'm talking about here. I am, by the way, just to let everybody know, I'm using Wikipedia as one of my sources here. And I'm not just using Wikipedia. The Wikipedia article for the Sad Puppies movement, which you're free to look at yourself, has various links to numerous different articles on different news websites that were talking about the different events that were surrounding Sad Puppies and the other movement that I'm going to talk about in a minute here. But essentially what Torgerson's Brad had a problem with is not just a trend towards the nomination of diverse works, but nominees that reflect literary rather than popular tastes. To him, he thinks that the popular imagining of the consumer world is Avengers and, you know, pulpy or action-based things. He personally considers the fandom, which he means to, or he's talking about the people who are voting for the Hugo Awards at these conventions, are out of touch with pop culture and elitist, which is a general this is sort of a pretty normal type of mudslinging at left-wing leaning things by right-wingers. You know, it's the conservative is like, we're of the people, and these are educated elitists. We don't need to talk about the reasons why those seem ridiculous, in my opinion. But essentially, he's taking a very, instead of Larry, which Larry wasn't super vocal about his reasons. I believe he was later. To be honest, Larry's part in this story is kind of gone. The main people we're going to be talking about, at least for this section here, is going to be Brad and another person. So yeah, Brad basically is saying that he thinks that the Hugo Awards aren't reflective of the greater fan or the greater pop culture, which, to be fair, they aren't, and they never really have been, because they're nominated by a specific group of people and then voted on by people who go to one convention. So I'm not really sure what exactly he was getting at the end of the day. I think, again, this is a reactionary movement, and I think it's about the diversity, and it's about people wanting to put something that they think is theirs into a specific box and not let people change that box. So it's gatekeeping and reactionaryism together, hand in hand. Like I said, there's a reason why I sort of like framed this episode like I did, where we are talking about the terms at the beginning, and then we go through the sort of what's happened. Anyways, the difference in 2015 is that the slate was predominantly male, but did include a few nominees who were women and people of various non-white racial backgrounds, but predominantly it was white men. And there's a number of different sources that we can look at for this. For example, there's an article on Entertainment Weekly by Isabella Bidenharm from 2015 about the Hugo Awards and about the voting bloc here. It talks a little bit about Torgerson's stance again. And it talks a little bit about different things. It also has a quote from a writer named Philip Sandifer, who I kind of like the quote, and it's, "The Hugo Awards have just been successfully hijacked by neo-fascists." And he has a full reading, and there's a full little blurb here. You know, there was a big pushback against this, and I'm going to talk about the pushback as well. But first, we need to talk about rabid puppies, which already sounds terrible, I'm going to say. And I'm not going to be kind to the person that I'm talking about here as well, because personally, I don't like them. Their views, I think, are not only racist, but misogynist, and they're just a person who's fueled by hate. They call themselves Vox Dei online. I'm going to call them Theodore Beale, because that's their birth name. And I take a little bit of enjoyment out of calling somebody by their birth name, especially when that person will refer to people who are trans or non-binary by their they dead name people, essentially. So he can get dead named, is my opinion on that. So Theodore, it's also like Vox Dei is far too cool for someone who's just a hate-fueled crap heap. I think I'm okay saying crap heap. That's fine with me. If that's a problem, then I won't say crap heap anymore. But he's a piece of poo. I can't swear on university radio for obvious reasons. But yeah, this is a type of person who makes me very angry, and I'm not a fan. I don't like this person. And, you know, it's important to talk about people like this, but I won't hide the fact that I don't like them. Anyway, so Theodore created a second slate, essentially, a second voting block of his own called Rabid Puppies, which, I mean, you can't get more overtly, like, militaristic than referring to, like, taking a name that was supposed to be, like, tongue-in-cheek, I think, or maybe it was just supposed to get you to, like, feel sympathetic, and then turning it into, like, a war cry by associating it with rabidness. Anyways, the slate from Rabid Puppies for 2015 was somewhat overlapping with the Sad Puppy slate, but it was slightly different. And the biggest thing was that Theodore explicitly told his followers that they should be nominating the exact slate, right? I mentioned earlier that Sad Puppies was sort of a recommendation. They were like, here's what we think that you should vote for. Feel free to use some of it or whatever. Theodore specifically was like, no. An important thing, I mentioned Opera Vitae Eterna, a short story that got no award. The writer of that was Theodore. So again, we have an element here where, as much as I'm pretty sure Theodore, because he is an activist within the far-right community, I think it was also personally invoked, which is what you get. Because at the end of the day, a lot of far-right activists feel like they've been personally targeted. Whether or not that is true is, I mean, who knows, right? At the end of the day, whether or not, you know, people decided to vote for him for no award specifically because they knew that he was a terrible human being, who knows? It doesn't really matter at the end of the day. The Hugos are voted, a voted award. This isn't like a small group of people who are sitting there, and this isn't the Academy Awards. You know, this isn't popular news media or popular film awards or anything like that. You know, there's not like a group of people that sits there and argues about what movie is good or whatever like that. The Hugos are, you know, you go to this convention and you vote. You don't even have to vote if you go to the convention. Like, it's obviously not required. So, again, we're going into the reason why I think it's completely ridiculous to be like this, because it's literally just fans voting for what they think is the best, is what the Hugos is at the end of the day. It's prestigious, and it's fantastic, and, you know, authors who win the Hugos are genuinely good authors, and, you know, congratulations to every single person who has won a Hugo Award. But then you get things like this. So Rabid Puppies ended up in 2015 successfully placing 58 of the 67 candidates they had on their slate on the ballot. Two of the nominations were for Theodore, and 11 were works published for his specifically. Another thing Theodore does is he's he has a publishing company. So by the way, we should just mention, publishing companies have agendas too, by the way. You know, they have political and social and cultural agendas, and you should be always aware of that when you are reading books or watching movies, because, you know, corporations have agendas too, right? Like, the people who control those corporations have agendas. Anyways, 11 of the works were published by his publishing company. He's the lead editor. So he has a very, like, I'm saying his publishing, he doesn't actually own it, but lead editor means he has a lot of control over the content that is within these. So there was a lot of pushback to this and what was happening. You know, a lot of people weren't really aware until all of this stuff started happening. And something that's really awesome is that a lot of the nominees declined their nominations. About six declined their nominations once the ballot was published, which is a thing that people can do. It is not a thing that happens often, so this is definitely a thing. It was a pushback. Some specific notable people, Connie Willis, who is an author who has won the Hugo Award multiple times. She's a very well-known author. I've never actually read anything, but she has 11 Hugo Awards. And she was supposed to present in 2015 the awards. She declined in protest to the rabid puppies and sad puppies. Tor Books, which is a well-known publisher of speculative fiction, their creative director, Irene Galo, on her own Facebook page, described both movements as unrepentantly racist, misogynist, and homophobic, and extreme right-wing to neo-Nazis, respectively. Which is strong. It's a strong wording. She clarified that that's not the official position of Tor Books, blah, 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 legal bull. But, yeah, it's very clear that people were against this. George R.R. Martin spoke out against it as well. And then there were plenty of people who, on the conservative side, that I don't need to give their names out because I don't really want to talk to them, who supported it as well. Lots of people compared this to Gamergate, which was around the same period of time. Now, I'm not going to go super into Gamergate, and I'm not going to talk about what Gamergate is very much, because, as I said earlier on, I think Gamergate almost deserves its own episode, and we can talk about different ways that there have been reactionary and right-wing attempts to essentially censor and gatekeep different types of media, to get rid of different movements towards diversity. But yeah, the end of the day, 2015 was a resounding failure for left or for right wing reactionaries. No single nominee from the puppy, some nominees from the puppies did win, but five different categories ended up being composed entirely of nominations from sad puppies. All of those categories that only had sad or rabid puppy recommendations within them ended up getting no awards. People voted resoundingly. It's very clear at the end of this that the people who were voting for this did not believe the same things that rabid and sad puppies believed. Because none of those sections, nobody won any awards. Most puppies' nominations were ranked below no awards. There were some... the only winning work that actually appeared on the puppy slate was Guardians of the Galaxy, which was the film that came out that year, or the previous year, I should say, because that's how the voting works. And Guardians of the Galaxy was a big enough commercial success that I don't think the sad and rabid puppies were the reason why they did that. It was good. It's really great that that was the reaction to it. Reactionaries usually are a minority movement. At least I like to think they are. Maybe not. In this case, they were. It's very clear that what their idea of what Theodore, Larry, and Brad's idea of what science fiction should be was not the predominant opinion. It's not the opinion of everybody. It's not the opinion of the people who vote for the Hugo Awards. And it's not the opinion, I think, of the greater group of science fiction fans that exist in the world today. There were a lot of... diversity has gotten better at the Hugo Awards, and it's really great that they continue... this specific movement failed. I should say that Theodore continues to put out slates. He put out a slate in 2016 for Rabid Puppies, and I'm unsure if he put out one in 2017, but I'll talk about what happened in 2017 that sort of makes a lot of this kind of moot. But essentially, 2015 was a resounding defeat for Sad and Rabid Puppies. Not that they had won previously, but it showed that there was a big problem within the science fiction community and within nerd culture as well. Gamergate was around this time too, and I'm going to keep mentioning Gamergate. George R. R. Martin actually described this as Puppygate, referencing to Gamergate and the problems that surrounded that controversy and the issues that surround video games and who is allowed or who has access to and who, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for here? Who has the power to interpret what happens within these games and how they're created? Theodore, after hearing that there was defeat, he described science fiction, the pro-diversity science fiction crowd, he called them SJWs, social justice warriors, which is derogatory term for progressives, I guess. Not that I really think it's super derogatory. I mean, I don't really think it is bad. But anyways, he described it as scorched earth tactics, said this is a battle, not a war, blah, blah, blah. We're winning, you know. It generally, you know, echoing some very Trumpian like tweets, essentially, which isn't surprising at all. But yeah, Theodore continues to be very active within his political views. I should mention that he is an active white supremacist, and he also does not believe that women should vote. So just a little bit of, you know, look into the life of the type of person who would spew hate for basically no reason. I don't, the reason kind of escapes me as to why he got involved in this, other than the fact that he got snubbed with a short story. But anyways, 2016 came around, and a different author took over Sad Puppies. Theodore came back with his own Rabid Puppies list. The difference with 2016 was that the list ended up being very close to the different people who won, actually. But that was not because the Sad Puppies and Rabid Puppies actually had a voting base. A lot of the works that they asked or told, in the case of Theodore, their fans to nominate were very popular works. Neil Gaiman and Neal Stephenson were both winners that year, and they won awards for the Hugos that year, but Neil Gaiman and Neal Stephenson are very well-known authors in science fiction and fantasy, and they would have won anyways because they're well-known and they're popular. Items on the Sad Puppies list won in a few fiction categories. They ended up being diverse authors, though. The only one on the Rabid Puppies list that won in an actual category was Best Novella, or Novelette, sorry. But again, they received a lot of no awards nominations. It was less of a bump in 2016. Then, in 2017, the Hugo Awards made some changes to their voting structures and how that worked, in an effort to reduce the power of block voting, which is exactly what these two movements were. It was an concentrated effort of, two movements and two fandoms of more right-wing leaning people to vote. 2017, there was an announcement that there was going to be a Sad Puppies 5 campaign, but the recommended list, their slate, never came out. I'm assuming because of the implementation of the voting block restrictions, but this is something that still, this was a failure for the people who attempted to do it. But that doesn't mean that these people, disappear. These people still write. These people still have influence. These people still have followers within the community. And there's a real problem with movements like this. You know, as I said partway through, because kind of it just came out and I needed to talk about it, is that diversity is important to having healthy growth within a community, especially within literature. And it's important for creativity. When you limit diversity, you end up limiting creativity. There's only so many stories that straight white men can tell. At the end of the day, you need people from other viewpoints. The first episode, I talked about intersectionality. And intersectionality is important here, too. It's important that we allow people who have experienced life in different ways to have their influence on literature and creativity within our spaces. Because those people are also fans. Those people want to see something and be like, hey, I've had experiences like this. I can see where this comes from. I can see characters who are like me. I can see situations like what I've experienced. And it's important to continue to have that. It's important to continue to have that for creativity. It's important to have that for fans. And it's important because it influences more people to write. It influences more people to be members of these groups. Influences those people to be creative. Whether that is within writing or whether that's within other sections of nerd culture. It only enriches the entertainment and the media that we have available by letting, and I shouldn't even use the word letting, but by welcoming people of diverse backgrounds into this culture, this global nerd culture. Part of me thinks that there should be more collective action on the part of, people who support these things, pro-diversity movements or, maybe left-wing inspired movements against these concentrated efforts of what is essentially, fascist gatekeeping reactionaries. But I don't know if that would be the answer or not. It's up for debate. Part of me really wants that. Part of me thinks that maybe that would embolden the people who are already emboldened into being more active. I don't really know. Maybe that's a topic of conversation. Maybe that if you guys have opinions, if anybody wants to talk about that, feel free to email. And like I said, hopefully Instagram's back up once this episode has been uploaded, but I don't know. I think I'm leaving this one on a bit of a question mark because I really don't know what's for the best. who does? I don't think anybody really does at the end of the day. But I do know that, you know, movements like this really make me passionate and stir up like a deep anger whenever anybody tells me how I should be able to enjoy or what I should be able to enjoy. And the only thing that gatekeeping can accomplish is alienating people who would want to enjoy the same things that you can enjoy. I don't understand why anybody would want, at the end of the day, to not share things that they love with other people. It's selfish and it really doesn't have a place, I think, in the future that we're going towards. And at the end of the day, science fiction is about looking to the future. It's about seeing what the future could possibly be and about hoping for or warning against a future, hoping for a better one and warning against a worse. And if we start to try to police the types of stories that we tell, the types of futures that we look towards, our futures become really bleak and they become the same as our present. And if we don't change and try to influence those things, then there's no point of writing about the future anymore because we already know what it's going to be like. I think that's a good point to end. Like I said before, feel free to email, and hopefully if Instagram's back up, who knows, maybe it's down forever. That wouldn't be terrible. if Instagram's back up, that'll be up there too. But like I said, this is a conversation, and right now it's one way, and I want it to be two ways. So yeah, feel free to email if you have opinions about it, if you want to talk more about this, if you have a specific topic you want me to talk about, or if you want to talk about anything, give me an email. RadioNerdWLU@gmail.com. All right. Well, then you guys have a great week, and I will see you in two. Bye.